Okay, good morning, everyone. I hope you're well. I want to start off with a pasuk. Again, we looked at this a long time ago. A pasuk in Mishle, Perek Gimel, chapter 3, verse 6. Again, a very famous pasuk. B'chol d'rachecha da'eyu, you should know Hashem in all of your ways. V'hu yiyasher orchaisecha, and he will straighten out your pathways. So there are two different words for a road. Life is perceived as a road that you have to travel. There is what is called a derech, and there is what is called an orach. And the difference, the Vilna Gaon says, between the word derech and the word orach is derech is a main road that is clearly marked. You know, the signs are there, you know where you have to go. And orach are the alleyways and the side streets, which may not be that very, very clear. So the Vilna Gaon says, what the pasuk basically tells us is the following. There are many decisions in life which a human being, a Jew, has to make. And sometimes those decisions are difficult, but they're also clear, meaning the difficulty of a decision. A decision may be difficult for two different reasons. A decision may be difficult because I simply don't know the right thing to do. So it's difficult because I'm confused. But very often that's not the case. Very often a person knows exactly what has to be done. But it's difficult because they lack the moral strength or courage to do it, right? So there's a difficulty that comes because of confusion, and there's a difficulty that comes because of lack of will. Derech, the Vilna Gaon says, because the word derech means a clear-cut road, refers to those decisions that are pretty clear, that you know what you have to do. They may be very hard, but if you follow the Ratzon Hashem in the decisions where the decision is clear, even though it's hard, then Hashem will protect you from the ambiguous, unknown situations. Meaning, b'chol d'rachecha da'eyu, if you make your goal in the clear-cut decisions, you know, chinuch, where to live, etc., you make those decisions to serve Hashem, then even in the confusing ambiguities where you don't really have clarity, Hashem will guide you to the right place where you need to be and the right decision that you have to make. So it starts off with you. B'chol d'rachecha da'eyu. Know Hashem in the decisions that are within you. Again, it's really a paraphrase of the pasuk in the Torah. Hanistaros Lashem Elokeinu, v'haniglos lanu ulevaneinu ad olam. What does that mean? There are in life niglos. There are clear issues in life, clear decisions, and that's my responsibility to make those decisions. There are also nistaros. There are going to be many questions in life in which I really have no idea what to do. I'm confused. It's uncertain. I'm not aware of the pros and the cons. That's going to be Hashem's achrayus. But Hashem will take care of me only if, within the scope of what I'm able to be machriya properly, I try to be machriya. And that's hanistaros l'Hashem Elokeinu. God will take care of the nistaros if you take care of the niglos. And again, as Chazal say elsewhere, B'derech she'adam reitzeh leilech malicha naisai, the pathway that you want to go is the pathway that God will lead you. In fact, that is another Maimer Chazal. Ein davar omeid b'fnei haratzein. Nothing stands before a person's will. So the Sfas Emes asks the Kasha, what does that mean? If I'm standing before an iron wall, and I will that wall to go away, the wall does not go away. What does it mean, Ein Dover Omed Bifnei HaRetzon? So the Sas Emes says very beautifully, nothing can stop you from wanting. Yeah, maybe your wanting is not going to knock down the wall, but there's nothing that will stop you from wanting. And in Ruchnius, once you want, B'derech Shadar Matzei Leilach Malichan Osa. So all you have to do is want. The ultimate success of any endeavor is up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And again, the Vilna Gaon reads it very beautifully in this pasuk by differentiating between derech and oirech. Derech is the clear path, and oirech is the unknown, confusing path. My responsibility is to follow Hashem in the derech, and then Hashem will take care of me in the unknown uncertainties that life faces. Because what I have to have in the derech is the ratzon, because I know the right decision. I know the right decision. The question is whether I want it enough, whether I'm willing to take the discomfort or the embarrassment or whatever it would be, right? And that's b'chol drachecha do'eil. This is how the Vilna Gaon understands this pasuk. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos uses the pasuk for a bit of a different idea. The Rambam basically emphasizes the idea, b'chol derechecha do'eil, know Hashem. I'm sorry, before I get to the Rambam, I'm sorry, I wanted to finish up something with the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon then adds something to this, which is almost a chassidish word. It's a little unusual for the Vilna Gaon. He says the following. If you look at the words again here, b'chol derechecha, in all of your ways, Da'ehu, know him, know Hashem. But da'ehu is actually an unusual grammatical construct. It's not the normal Hebrew construct for knowing him. So the Vilna Gaon says you break up da'ehu into two phrases. Da, knowing, and heivav. He is chamisha chumshe Torah, and Vav are the six orders of the Mishnah. In other words, the He is the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, and the Vav is the Torah Shebalpeh, the Torah that was originally oral, that was then written down. And therefore, what the Pasuk is Merames is, the way you know Hashem is by connecting yourself to the He Vav, Da, Hu, the He Vav. That it is through the learning of Torah that a person comes to know Hashem, because the Torah is Hashem's will, and Hashem's will and Hashem's essence are one and the same. He then goes on to the next part of the pasuk, Vohu, who means he, Hashem, will straighten out your oirech, your pathways. But he also says, again, it's kind of a chassidish thought, that Hu is spelled He, Vav, Aleph. So the way you understand it is, if you connect yourself to the He and the Vav, you will be connected to the Aleph, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is how you connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Baal HaTanya, and again, perhaps Hashem should forgive me for using the Baal HaTanya as to augment the thought of the Gra. You know, the Baal HaTanya was the great Hasidish Rebbe, who wanted to meet with the Vilna Gaon when the Vilna Gaon excommunicated Hasidus in the early years, and the Vilna Gaon refused to meet with the Baal HaTanya. But I think in Shemayim, I think everybody is speaking to each other in a good way. The Baal HaTanya says, the person who shouts, I want to become close to God, and does not learn Torah, says, I don't need Torah, I just want to be close to Hashem, is like a person that is surrounded by water, fresh water, good water, and says, I'm thirsty, I'm thirsty, I'm thirsty, can't anybody give me something to drink? But the person is so foolish. He is surrounded by water. The Torah is compared to water. If you have a thirst to be connected to Hashem, it's not going to be by New Age spirituality. It will be by learning the Torah and by keeping the Torah. That's how you become connected to Hashem. So that is the meaning, Vahu, through the He and the Vav, you will come to the Aleph, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the one and only God. Right, so that is the Vilna Gaon's understanding of the Pasuk. And again, so it turns out that the fundamental idea of the Pasuk is, number one, Talmud Torah as that which connects us to Hashem, and number two, the idea that when I make the decisions that are within my purview to serve Hashem, then Hashem will give me guidance and clarity, even in the murky areas where there's a lot of confusion. In fact, if you go a little further, this actually explains the phenomenon that we might call Das Torah. Das Torah is the concept that a great Gadol Tzaddik expresses a view on something, so we consider it to be pretty good. Now, people say, oh, what does a Gadol's opinion have to do with politics or anything else? Gadol knows Shas, a Gadol knows Shulchan Aruch. Good, so he knows Shulchan Aruch better than me. When it comes to politics, why is his opinion worth anything? But you see that this goes back to the idea that when a person is connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on those areas which are within his koach, Hashem will give him an ability to understand and navigate even those areas that are beyond their particular expertise, as it were. Right? You might call the Torah as the derech and politics as the irech, the murky, unknown situation. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu will illuminate the irech because of the person's commitment to the derech. So this is how the Vilna Gaon learns the Pasuk. The Rambam learns the Pasuk moving in a slightly different direction. And that is, the Rambam makes a very beautiful point that in Judaism, we have to recognize that we serve Hashem not only in the spiritual parts of our lives, but even in the physical parts of our lives. Right? A person might think, if a person really wanted to be a tzaddik, that maybe I should not eat, I should not sleep, I should afflict myself with physical pain, I should get away from gashmius, get away from materialism. The Rambam says that is not the derech that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live a physical life, to eat, to sleep, to take care of our physical health, to get married, unlike other religions that might teach that the ideal of holiness is to be celibate and to take a vow of poverty. And unfortunately, we know how well that has worked in the Catholic Church, not so great. But even as a spiritual ideal, it is not the Derech HaTorah. Rather, one should have the attitude that when I eat and I sleep and I try to have a nice home, I'm doing it for the purpose of glorifying God, of having strength and serenity and health to be able to do mitzvos. When a person goes to work, even in some sense, a man that's going to work on some level is not learning Torah at that time, but a person has a kavana, I'm working to support my family. I'm working to give tzedakah. I'm working to make a kiddush Hashem among the people that I'm working. So says the Rambam, one has to understand that that itself is avodas Hashem. One should not look at their lives when I'm in shul, when I'm learning, that's when I'm serving Hashem, and the rest of the time I'm off duty. Number one, that creates a lot of frustration, a lot of sadness. But one has to understand that even the gashmius of one's life, the physicality of one's life, is avodas Hashem. And the Rambam says that is the meaning. So if a person goes on vacation, right? So one could look at vacation as avodas Hashem, even though you're enjoying yourself, recharging your batteries, niflos habore, to see the wonders of God's creation. And that thought turns everything into an avodas Hashem. And the Rambam says, that is the meaning of the pasuk, b'chol drachecha da'eyu, know Hashem in all of your pathways. Not only in the ruchnius, but even in the gashmius. Gashmius means the materiality. And understand that in the gashmius is also ruchnius. And it all depends on the machshava that you have. This is an amazing thing. two people, two religious Jews, could be doing exactly the same thing. And for one person, it is a great mitzvah. And for the other person, at best, it's neutral, and at worst, it might be an aveira. Right? Two teenagers are playing basketball, right, during yeshiva break. One person consciously thinks, I'm playing basketball because I want to be healthy and I want to, you know, get rid of some of my tension so I can serve Hashem better. So the Rambam says the basketball is a mitzvah at that point. It's avodas Hashem. The other person's not thinking about it. It's not avodas Hashem. That thought can transform the very nature of what we do throughout the day. It's a very important idea. You know, they tell the story, I think I mentioned it before. This is one of those stories that comes in Jewish, Christian, and Muslim versions. Every religion has its version of the story. So it is not a medrash, and even the Jewish version, I have a feeling, probably got it from the Christian version. That sometimes happens. There's sometimes borrowing of motifs. But the basic story can apply to any type of religion, but I'll apply it to Judaism, in which you had three people, and three of them were stonecutters. And they spent their whole day just cutting stone and schlepping stone. Unbelievable, hard, back-breaking drudgery, hard labor, 12 hours a day. All three people are doing the same thing. And each person was asked to describe, what is your life? So person A said, my life is, I get up at 6 o'clock. I eat a piece of bread. I then break stones for 12 hours. I'm dead tired. I come home. I have another piece of bread. I go to sleep. And it just starts over and over and over again. He's describing almost an unbearable life, a life in which over and over again, the same drudgery, no break. The second person said, every morning I get up and I know with every stone that I'm cutting, I'm putting bread on the table. I'm creating a life for my family so that my children can have a life that's better than mine. And that gives me joy and that gives me purpose because I'm doing something more than hitting stones. I'm raising a family. And then the third person, apparently this was stones that were either cut for Taj Mahal in one version, cathedral, other version, shul, other version. Wouldn't be Beis HaMikdash because you're not allowed to use metal tools for the Beis HaMikdash. But the third person said, my life is an unending glorification to Hashem because every stone I cut is going to be put into the building that will glorify HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So three people are doing the same thing, but the meaning of what they're doing is totally different. One elevated their task to a spiritual avodas Hashem. The other elevated their task to a chesed and a kindness to those that he loved and cared about. And the third saw this just as unending drudgery that will never end. Objectively, they're doing the same thing. Spiritually, the activities are totally, totally different. And the Rambam says, that thought, b'chol d'rachecha da'eyu, is what Shlomo HaMelech means, to sanctify even the physical. And he says, and this is the meaning of the Maimer Chazal in Pirkei Avos, v'chol ma'asecha yiyu l'shem shamayim, all of your actions shall be for the sake of Hashem. The Rambam says that's exactly what Chazal meant in Pirkei Avos. Do not divide the world between the physical and the spiritual. Okay, so this is how the Rambam interprets the Pasuk, B'chol d'rachecha da'eyu. So seen in this way, I want to connect it to something that we read about yesterday. Yesterday we read the Parsha of Bris Milah. Now there's a famous question that the Mefarshim ask, that Avraham Avinu, Chazal say, kept the whole Torah even before the Torah was given. Now, I want to emphasize, that doesn't mean he had to keep the whole Torah. God didn't command him. But he understood that, the same way most of us would understand that it's wrong not to kill. We would understand that intuitively. Avraham Avinu understood, we can't even describe this process, why wearing woolen linen was not a good thing to do. In other words, he saw in the spiritual DNA of the universe that these mitzvos and these things that you have to avoid as averos bring holiness into the world. He did reverse engineering. He looked at the structure of the universe and figured out that you need Shabbos and you need kashrus and you need tefillin. This is the statement of Chazal. Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah ad shelo nitna. The Ramban says only in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Laretz, but at least in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the Gemara itself only says it by Avraham Avinu. It doesn't say it by the other Avos. But later, Sfarim do extend this, that all the Avos kept the whole Torah ad shelo nitna. And that's why Avraham, in this week's Parsha, first gives the angels milk and then gives them meat. Because if you have milchiks, you can have fleishiks, but you can't have fleishiks and then milchiks. Therefore, the chalav was before the meat, the ben bakor. Chema b'chalav ben bakor. So the question that the Mefarshim ask is, if Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah even before it was given, why didn't he circumcise himself until Hashem commanded him? Hashem commanded Avraham at the age of 99. He had already been in Eretz Yisrael 24 years from 75. Is Lech Lecha, and he was keeping the Torah, we say. So why didn't he do a bris? In other words, he didn't do a bris until he was commanded. Why don't I say he should have kept that mitzvah too? Ad shalai nitna, he should have done a bris intuitively without its sivoi from Hashem. So one of the terutzim that's given is from one of the greatest of the commentaries on Rashi. Do you know that there are 300 commentaries on Rashi? Rashi and Chumash, 300 commentaries. But the greatest of the commentaries was written by a Turkish rabbi of the 1500s, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, called, he's often abbreviated, the Ram, Reish Aleph Mem. And this is considered to be the greatest of the commentaries on Rashi. And Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi raises the question, why didn't Avraham Avinu do a bris before he was commanded? And the answer that he gives is the following answer. Chazal say, Gadol HaMitzvah V'yaisa, when you do a mitzvah that you're commanded to do, that is greater than doing a mitzvah you're not commanded to do. An example would be women. Women are exempt from sitting in the sukkah and taking a lulav and esrog because it's a time-bound mitzvah and it's not one of the many exceptions. Nevertheless, if a woman takes a lulav and sits in the sukkah, she very definitely gets reward from Hashem for doing that mitzvah. It's still a meritorious good thing to do. And not only that, but at least Ashkenazim paskin, that the woman can even make the bracha, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav. Sfardim don't paskin that she could make a bracha because she's not commanded, but they still say she gets reward as an eina mitzvah v'yaisa. Nevertheless, Chazal say, the reward of a mitzvah is greater than the reward of an eino mitzvah. The Marshal writes, that is the reason why we make a sudas mitzvah when a boy becomes bar mitzvah. What's the great joy about a bar mitzvah? I mean, after all, if anything, it's a little ominous. Now he's responsible for his averos. But the answer is, now, until now, every mitzvah he did was eino mitzvah. Now he's doing the mitzvahs as a mitzvah. That logic, Rabbi Avadya Yosef writes, should apply equally to a bas mitzvah as well, for the same reason. Other poskim are cholek for various reasons. So says Rabbi Yo Mizrahi, every other mitzvah Avraham could do on a voluntary basis, as an Eino Mitzvah. And when God commands him, he'll be a Mitzvah. But Bris Milah, you could only do once. So he knew Hashem was going to command him eventually. So if he does it now, he'll be doing it as an Eino Mitzvah. He'll never have the chance to do it as a Mitzvah. That is why he waited. Just as a little aside, one might question the whole premise. Why does a Mitzvah get more reward? I might think the opposite. If I do something because I have to do it, okay, I'm doing my job. But if I do a mitzvah I don't have to do, is that not extra credit? It's like time and a half for overtime. You work your regular working hours, you get what you get. You do more, right? So Tosfos says, a fascinating idea. Tosfos says, once you are mitzvah, there's a Yetzer Hara in you that wants to rebel against Hashem. Meaning to say, there's a certain stubbornness that we have. We don't like to be told we have to do something. It's easier to do something when we feel we don't have to do it than when we feel we have to do it. That's the stubbornness, right? The husband who is about to take out the garbage on his own. And as he's taking out the garbage, his wife calls out, "Could you take out the garbage?" There will be, I'm not being biographical here, there will be a momentary notion, I don't like to be told what to do, even though I was going to do it anyway. That's why, you know, in the Reform movement, one of the positive developments in the Reform movement over the past few years is more and more Reform Jews put on tefillin every day. It's still a small amount, but tefillin is growing. That's good, right? But almost 100% of the growth are only in the women. More and more women are putting on tefillin, more and more men are not. Now you might say, why is there such a hysteresis of tefillin among women and not men? Now, putting aside the question, are women allowed to wear tefillin? That's a shaila. But the one thing for sure is, no machlokas, women are 100% putter from tefillin. They are exempt, that's for sure. So it's interesting. So the women are doing it as an Eino Mitzvah, so that they want to do. But the men, to do it as a Mitzvah, that we have a certain rebellious. Now, I don't mean to not reform. This is true for all of us. Tosfos says this is true for all of us, that once we have to do something, there's a certain natural rebelliousness. That's why you often find that when it comes, you know, when you want to be makabel something because of a tzara or whatever it is, it's always like an extra thing. I'll do an extra number of Tehillim. I'll do an extra, as opposed to working on Shachris Mincha Maariv in a proper Kabbalah. You know, it's like the stuff I have to do, nothing special with that. Nah, just everybody does that, you know. Right? But it's something extra. We always want to do something extra because that's the Eino Mitzvah V'yaseh. So that's answer number one. And that's really not relevant to Mishlei, but the answer number two is going to be very, very relevant. Yeah. Because there's a greater resistance in me. That might be one of the reasons why you'll find that a child right after bar mitzvah will often experience a certain yirida. Now, there's other explanations, meaning leading up to the bar mitzvah, there was so much excitement, etc. And then after the bar mitzvah, now maybe in some level that's natural because the big event passed. But one explanation might be that once he's bar mitzvah already, he's now mitzvah v'yaseh. Now I gotta do it. It's not as much fun as it was when I didn't have to do it and I was doing it. Right? That's why kids below bar mitzvah are so eager to fast on Yom Kippur. It's like a big time for the fast on Yom Kippur, right? Once they're bar mitzvah, oh, when is the fast going to be over? You know, whatever it is. Okay. But the second answer I want to give you is a Maharsha, one of the great commentaries in the Gemara. The Maharsha says, the Kasha does not start off to begin with, because the statement that Avram kept the whole Torah after it was given was only after he had a Bris Milah. The Bris Milah gave him the capacity. to understand the Torah. In other words, to ask the Kasha, if he kept the whole Torah before it was given, why didn't he circumcise? Until he circumcised, he wasn't keeping the whole Torah. It was the circumcision itself that gave him the ability to keep the whole Torah. Memela, until he was given the commandment, he didn't know he had to circumcise himself. This is what the Marsha says in Yevamos, that the concept that the Avos kept, or Avram at least, kept the Torah before it was given, was only after the bris. So what I want to explore is, what is it about the bris mila that would enable, that would empower Avram Avinu to perceive the Torah? Now, question number two, related, and we're going to tie this back to B'chol D'rechecha Do'eyu, is we find, of course, all of us know that Avram and Sarah, their original name, Avram Sarai, but when Avraham was given, when Avram was given the commandment of Bris Milah, together with that commandment, Hashem told Avraham at the age of 99, your name shall no longer be Avram, it should be Avraham, because you are now an Av Hamon Goyim, you are now a father of a multitude of nations. And similarly, Sarai, your wife, shall no longer be Sarai, her name shall be Sarah. Actually, according to the Medrash, what happened actually was the Yud of Sarai was split into two hays. She kept one hay, and the other hay was given to Avram. So actually, so Avram got his hay from the hay of half of the Yud of Sarai and the like. So question number two is, what is it about Brit Milah that would create a Shinoi Hashem, a change of the name? So the two questions are, number one, why does Bris Milah enable Avram to keep the whole Torah? And number two, why is Bris Milah a reason for the Shinoi Hashem of Avraham and Sarah? So here, let me start off with a Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara in Maseches Menachos tells us that Olam Haba was created with the spiritual power of the letter Yud. And Olam Hazeh was created with the spiritual power of the letter He. So Olam Haba is connected to Yud. Olam Hazeh is connected to He. And that is the meaning of the pasuk that actually is in davening every day. But it's a pasuk, ki baka Hashem, ka is yud hey, tsur olamim. Bika, with yud and hey, tsur olamim, Hashem created worlds. With yud, olam haba, with hey, olam hazeh. Ki baka Hashem, tsur olamim. The Maharal explains, why is Olam Haba a Yud and Olam Hazeh a He? So he says, Yud is the least physical of any letter of the Aleph Beis. It's just a little point. That represents the world of Ruchnius, the world of spirituality, the world that does not have physicality or Gashmiyat. That's Olam Haba. As you know, the Rambam goes to very great lengths to disabuse ourselves of the idea that Olam Haba is a physical place. Again, this is actually an important point, because in many Mamorei Chazal, Olam Haba actually is described in very physical terms. We eat and we drink and we have a meal, a two-course meal. There's the Leviathan, that'll be shechted, and then there's the shor. I'm sorry, not shechted, that'll be served. There's a fish. And then the shor habor. You know what they say? Why does Hashem have to serve two courses? The tzaddikim Leviathan and the Shor Habor. The Shor Habor, the wild ox, will be big enough to feed everybody. So they say some people will not trust the Shechita. They only eat fish. So even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, shechs the Shor Habor, they say, you know, what's the hashkacha here? And then there will be wine that is kept in the grape from Sheshe Shemei Breshes. So the point is this. Olam Haba is actually described in Chazal in very, very, very physical ways. Similar, Lahavdil, Mea Havdalas, to the Islamic descriptions, although without the virgin thing. So the Rambam went to very great lengths to teach us that these are all metaphors and these are all mishalim. And in fact, Olam Haba is devoid of any physicality at all. The only thing you experience in Olam Haba is your nana mizif hashchina, you get the pleasure of being connected to Hashem. And we use physical images because that's how we understand pleasure. Words, think about the best meal you ever had in your life and multiply it by 10 trillion times. That's what it's going to be like. But not really. Totally different. But, you know, we can use the physical pleasures as a way of understanding. So Olam Haba is kulo ruchnius. That's why it's yud. Back to the Maral. Now, Olam Hazeh is hey. What is hey? So the Maral says, hey is two letters. You have a dalet, and the left regel, the left leg of the hay could be called a yud. I would think of it, but he calls it a yud. Dalet yud. Now dalet, if yud represents pure spirituality, dalet represents pure materialism. And the reason is because matter exists in four dimensions, the way we commonly experience it. We have length, we have width, we have breadth or height, right? Those are the three dimensions of objects. And then we have time. Einstein was not the person who invented the time-space idea, space-time. This was something, in fact, even Chazal didn't invent it. This was something that was known all the way back to the times of the Greeks. And Chazal agreed with the idea that time is an aspect of matter. We don't fully understand that. But when the universe was created, time was also created. There is no concept of time that is independent of matter. Again, I can say those words. I confess I myself don't understand exactly what it means. But this is a well-known philosophical idea that is within Judaism as well, that time is connected to chomer. Chomer is matter. Mimela, four, represents Gashmi. Yud represents Ruchni, spirituality. So what is Olam Hazeh? We must bring spirituality into the physical. Now, it's interesting that hey is only half the gematria of Yud, because it's true that when spirituality meets physicality, it gets lowered in intensity. In other words, if I could be purely spiritual like the angels, you know, it's more intense. But the Ratzon Hashem ultimately is that we bring holiness into the darkness. In fact, that's why the famous Sheva Brachas Gemara of Yud and Hey, the word for Ish is Aleph Yud Shin. The word for Isha is Aleph Shin Hey. So they share the two common letters of Eish, but the man is Yud and the woman is Hey, and that spells the name of God. And the Gemara in Yavama says, when Hashem is in their life and in their marriage, the man is doing what a man is and a woman is what a woman is. Take out Hashem. Take out the Yud and the Hey. They become a destructive fire. You have undoubtedly heard this at your Sheva Brachos or at someone else's Sheva Brachos. But the Gemara doesn't explain why does the man get the Yud and the woman get the Hey. The Gemara doesn't explain that. So the Maral says, men temperamentally get dragged down by the world. It brings out their egotism, their competitiveness. So just like somebody with emphysema has to go on pure oxygen The man has to go to the kollel, to the shul, etc. The man has to get away from the world because the world will drag him down. A woman's koach is the hey, that she is able to bring the yud into the dalet. And that's a very, very difficult point. And in many ways, the ezer kenegdo, the fact that a wife is a helpmate to her husband, is to be madrichim into how to bring the ruchnius even into the gashmius. This is what the Maral says. An amazing idea. So yes, it is very true that the hay is less intense than the yud, right? So the spiritual pleasure a person gets by just learning and davening may be much greater than carpool and running around doing all sorts of things. But ultimately, the hay is a higher madrega because you're bringing a Kadosh Baruch Hu even into physicality. So now, let's look at an observation of the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch points out that the bris milah is on a portion of the male anatomy that on some level is the most animalistic part of the human being. It's the part that is connected with elimination, urination, the part that is connected with sexual arousal. These are things that are sometimes not within voluntary control. These are functions that we share in common with animals. They are not uniquely and distinctly human and certainly not Jewish traits. And yet the bris is on that portion of the human being that you might call is least spiritual. Because what's the lesson? The Sefer Achinuch says that Hashem is telling you, as the same lesson as the Rambam, in B'chol Drachecha Da'eyu, that's the connection, that even the physical and animalistic portion of your life can be consecrated, elevated, dedicated to God. So now you understand why Avram gets a hay in his name only when he's given the commandment of bris milah. Because if hay symbolically represents the capacity to bring the yud into the dalet, in other words, to bring holiness even to the animalistic and materialistic parts of my nature, that's what the hay represents. That is what bris milah elevated him to. Meaning, until bris milah, kedusha was separation from the world. Bris milah created the phenomenon of elevating the gashmius. So now you understand, the hay represents exactly what the bris milah represents. Right? The hay. So now, this also explains the marsha, the first question, why Avram did not do the mitzvot until he had bris milah. If you think about it, mitzvos maisios are very, very physical actions. Whether it's, you know, separating challah, whether it's lighting Shabbos candles, that's a drabbanan, whether it's putting on tefillin, putting on tzitzis, taking a lulav, building a sukkah. Now one might say, why do I have to be so involved in all of these physical actions? I want to be close to God. I want to contemplate. I want to meditate. I want to think about Hashem. Why am I running around getting cut with schach, you know, whatever it is? In other words, one might, if you perceive Kedusha as withdrawing from the world, then there's actually going to be a certain impatience in all of these physical details I got to get involved in. So until Avraham Avinu understood that you can sanctify even the physical, he didn't yet understand the importance of doing physical mitzvahs. In fact, maybe he didn't even perceive them. But once the bris milah teaches that you sanctify even the physical of man, and once he's given the hay, which is the capacity to bring the yud into the dalet, says the Marsha, then and only then Does he understand the importance of these physical, material, megushim dika actions? Now, I remember many, many years ago, I was involved a little bit with the conversion of a woman who wanted to convert to Judaism. And she was a very, very brilliant scholar. She had a doctorate in comparative religion. She could read Gemaras in the original, you know, no problem at all. And she wanted to convert. The only problem is that she wasn't keeping that many mitzvahs. So when I talked to her once about keeping kosher, she wasn't living in a Jewish city. So she gave me immediately, she gave me the 20 reasons. Oh, she says she loves kashrut as a concept. And she gave me like 20 reasons of Barbanel and Rambam and Ramban, all the reasons. So I said, okay, Baruch Hashem, you're going to keep kosher? She says, no, I'm not going to keep kosher because I love kashrut as a concept. It's not something I can do right now. Mm. So she loved the spirituality of the idea, but the lamaisa was too hard. The lamaisa was too hard, right? The actual physicality. Now, obviously at that point, I could not convert her. Baruch Hashem, for those, if you're interested in the rest of the story, she actually eventually did become a Gioris Tzedekes. I believe she lives in Eretz Yisrael. And I see her once in a while, and she always kind of reminds me of, how I was not the one that brought her Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. But at that point, she was not ready. Eventually, she became ready in Baruch Hashem, and with all of her knowledge, obviously, that's a tremendous thing. She's combining her understanding with her Maisim, and that's a wonderful, wonderful combination. But the point basically is that it takes a certain hasaga to realize the significance of your material actions. Because a spiritual person, in fact, you actually see this in the world today. People who are intensely spiritual are often impatient with what you might call the minutiae of halacha. Right? So they really think about Shabbos as Hashem created the world in 6 days and he rested on Shabbos and I'm emulating Hashem. But then they don't understand. Why can't I rip toilet paper? How is that making me closer to Hashem? Why can't I turn on an electric light? Makes no sense to me. Or Zaman Kriyashma, let's say, for a man. Zaman Kriyashma is 8 o'clock or whatever it would be. But a person is tired. A person says, if I sleep till 11, I will have so much more kavana. Isn't that the point? In fact, without going over barichas, this was a major, major, major point of contention between early Hasidus and the Misnagdim, where Hasidus emphasized so much the inner kavana that there was a fear that they would be mezalzel in the details of halacha that kind of contradict inner kavana. That's why Rav Chaim Volozhiner wrote in the Nefesh HaChaim, which is really a polemic against Hasidus, although in a very gentle way. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was very different than the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon, Me'ezet HaMshi'iya, was very, very harsh. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was absolutely not. He was very, very gentle. In fact, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was so close to the Vilna Gaon, never signed on any of the excommunications that the Vilna Gaon signed on. He did not sign, even though many, many Rabbanim did sign. And people give all sorts of terutzim that he would not sign on anything that his Rebbe signed because that would imply that he was an equal. But Lanias Daiti, I think it's very clear from Rav Chaim Volozhiner's life afterwards as well, that although he would never, ever, ever say that he had a different approach than his Rebbe, I think Lamaisi did have a different approach. He felt that you would not combat this shita with any type of negative opposition, but you would do it in a much more gentle way. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner gives an example. Let's imagine you want to make a Pesach Seder, and you're tired the night of Pesach. So you figured, I'll go to sleep early, and tomorrow morning we'll make the best Seder you've ever seen. Right? That would be shtus. Right, that would be shtus. You got to do the maisa that Hashem commanded. So I remember I once told the story over to a group of not yet observant women.
And one of them raised her hand and said, yeah, we did exactly that last year. We couldn't get the family together for Pesach. So we decided we would do the Seder a week later. A week later. And it was fantastic. It was the best Seder you ever had. Everybody was awake and excited. So when they say life imitates art, right? What Chaim Lesner thought would be the most absurd thing that anybody could ever think of. People do it. Now, of course, it's already known in nursing homes. This is done all the time. They make a whole Seder, Erev Pesach. Okay, whatever. That's for a different reason. But people. So the point basically is that Avram had to come to the Havana, as we all have to come to the Havana, that spirituality is not only about meditation, not only about contemplation, it is not only about withdrawing from the world, but it's about taking the physical part of the world and elevating it by using it in Avodas Hashem. But Avram Avinu understood that idea only from the Bris Milah, which sanctifies the animalistic, and only from the hay, which is the idea of the Yud going into the Dalet. And that is why, that answers the two questions, that is why Bris Milah gave him both a Shinui Hashem, and as the Marsha says, the ability to keep the whole Torah, Ad Shalom Nitna. Let me just mention a few other miscellaneous observations about a Bris that are not connected directly to this Pasuk, B'chol Jerachecha Da'eyu. And that is a few things about a bris. Number one, the bris is generally involuntary because the child did not choose. Sometimes an adult or a ger chooses, but the eight-day-old baby didn't make a choice. And this is an important lesson because it reminds us that Avodas Hashem is not a choice. We can choose to do it with joy or do it with burden. That's our choice, the attitude that we have. But we have to understand that it's not a question of mood. You know, I'm not in the mood. The bris reminds us, al korchecha tochai, you live in the world whether you like it or not, and you have chiyuvim. This is a very important idea. That sometimes, like somebody said to the Chafetz Chaim, says, I have a problem. I'm not inspired when I learn. And that is a problem. But the Chafetz Chaim said, so I guess you have to learn without inspiration for a while. Right? The second aspect is that the bris hurts a little bit. Not as much as parents think, because the child's nervous system is not so developed. But a little pain there is. Although I was thinking, I was a sadik at a bris this past week. I was thinking that maybe the pain is more from the sadik than from the moel. Because when you're a sadik, especially if you're scared you're going to drop the baby, you actually push down the baby's legs with a lot of pressure. So it might be, maybe I'm the one that hurt the baby instead of the moel, I don't know. But be it as it may, there's a certain amount of pain. And that's also an important lesson, because that's no pain, no gain. In anything that's meaningful in life, there has to be a certain amount of pain. Indeed, I mentioned in another shiur a very classic article around 15, 20 years ago, maybe more. There was a woman, she died recently, a reporter, Ellen Willis, whose brother, many years ago, became a Baal Tshuva in Yerushalayim, and I think he's a Rebbe in Eshet Torah in maybe South Africa, of Chaim Willis. And she couldn't believe how her brother got frum. It made no sense to her. She thought it was a cult. She grew up in a secular Jewish family in Queens. So she was a journalist, and she wanted to explore what's going on here with the Baal Tshuva business. Is it a cult? Are there drugs involved? She really wanted to figure out, how does a normal person get roped into this? So, lo and behold, she got an assignment from Rolling Stone magazine, of all places. I think that maybe they thought there was the drug angle. They didn't know what was going on. And they sent her, and they give her unlimited page space. She was writing like a 20-page article about this phenomenon. And I remember when it came out, all the Rabbanim, all the Kirov people, wanted to get this magazine. But they would be a little embarrassed to buy a Rolling Stone magazine in a 7-Eleven. So I know one of the Rabbanim in Chicago decided that he would go to the 7-Eleven 2 o'clock in the morning, Motzei Shabbos, when nobody would be around. So he goes, and you know, he's embarrassed. He takes the 7-Eleven, not the Rolling Stone, is going to buy it. And right then, the boy that was his Shabbos guest comes in to get some beer, Motzei Shabbos. Yeah. He says, oh, now I know what your rabbis do and you're off time, you know, Rolling Stone. But in the article, and again, it was a very poignant article because you can see that she's changing as she learns more and more about Judaism, about Tshuva. It's affecting her. The journalist is no longer an observer. She becomes a participant. And she's mamash on the verge. And you don't even know. Of maybe this is the right thing for her. The last minute she pulls back. I don't know what happened afterwards, but it's really kind of sad in that way. She was really, I don't want to say on the verge of jumping over the cliff, maybe that's the wrong metaphor to use. But she writes about a conversation that she had with Rav Noach Weinberg, Zichrono Livracha. And Rav Noach Weinberg says, what do you think people live for? What is the most important thing in people's life? So she said, human beings live for pleasure. Now, he didn't call her a hedonist. He didn't call her, an apikoris. He said, you're right. Human beings live for pleasure. What do you think is the opposite of pleasure? So she said, the opposite of pleasure is pain. We want to avoid pain. He said, no. All pleasure requires pain. The opposite of pleasure is comfort. She didn't understand. Comfort, pleasure seems to be kind of the same. He said, no. Pleasure is the feeling that you get when you struggled and you made sacrifices. Whether it's in the time that you spent in building up a marriage and taking care of your children. And then you see a nachas, you see something good. Even building a business, there's pleasure. Comfort is when you never bothered to get out of bed. So we might say, comfort is the kid that inherits $10 million from his father. Pleasure is the person who built up the business from scratch. And that's why there is indeed a policy, makes sense, that some very rich people, like, you know, they don't want to leave a lot of money to their children, not because they're cruel, but they think the children will be happier if they can kind of build up. So Rav Weinberg said, Judaism is not about being comfortable. There's a lot about being Jewish that's not comfortable. I can't eat when I'm hungry if I'm not in the right, you know. Okay, Yerushalayim is a little different, but, you know, in most cities, you know, I'm limited where I could eat, even here, depending on the hashgacha. I can't go to certain places. I can't fit in with the crowd. A lot of things I can't do. I stick out. It involves sacrifices. But ultimately, that gives a person a pleasure in life. So that's the second lesson. If the first lesson is involuntary, it's not a question of your moods. The second lesson is no pain, no gain. It hurts a little bit. The third lesson is the one that we did talk about, sanctifying the physical, right? The shiur was devoted to. The fourth lesson is connected to the number 8. Bris Milah's on the 8th day. And the Maral gives us a very important clue. The cycle of nature is based on 7. 6 days of creation, then Shabbos, and then it repeats itself. So the natural world is 7. 8 is above nature. We have to remember, Hashem's relationship to Klal Yisrael is a supernatural relationship. It makes no sense that we were still here. It's Lamaila min Ateva. Yaakov Emden said, and this is before the Holocaust and before the State of Israel, that people ask, why doesn't Hashem do miracles anymore? If you contemplate the survival of Am Yisrael when every great empire tried to destroy us, this is a greater miracle, he says, than Kriyas Yamsuf and the 10 Makas. It's greater. And then if we add the ability to come back to Eretz Yisrael, to that, which Rav Yaakov Emden did not envision at the time. There was a British historian, Arnold Toynbee, who wrote a huge multi-volume history of ancient civilizations. And he studied 50 civilizations, the Sumerians, the Assyrians, the Egyptians, the Babylonians, all the way through the Romans. Imagine the massive data he had to master. And he was able to identify patterns, common patterns, what causes a civilization to succeed, what causes it to fail. And he actually was able to discover what he called historical laws, the way history works. This formula worked for 49 out of 50 civilizations. It didn't work for the Jewish people. The Jewish people didn't have a common territory for most of our history. We were not in Eretz Israel. We didn't have a common language. Most people did not speak Hebrew. Different things. Now, it is Yadua that Toynbee was a big anti-Semite. That's very Yadua. But I want to be Melamed Zuchut. If I wrote a book of 10,000 pages and the book works for 49 out of 50 and it's only the Jewish people that are holding me up, I would be pretty upset. These people, they're ruining my book, right? 10,000 pages of work, right? So there's a schus, maybe he had a reason to be upset. But because of this, he concluded, infamously, that the Jewish people are a fossil. They shouldn't exist at all. They're like finding something that's 10 million years old, whatever it would be. And there was a famous debate. Yaakov Herzog, the brother, the late brother of the late president of Israel, the son of Rav Yitzhak Herzog, was debating Toynbee. This is called the Herzog-Toynbee debate. It was a very, very famous debate where Toynbee says the Jews don't belong in the world and Herzog was saying they do belong in the world. But I want to tell you that I side with Toynbee because of the following. If Toynbee is making the claim that under the laws of history there should not be a Jewish people at all, they don't make sense, they don't fit the way the world operates, the answer is, he is right. This is what the Maral is saying. Our bris is eight. It is mechubar lamayla min hateva. Lamayla min hateva. The final point I'll make, because we're running late, is that the bris in a person comes from uncovering, right? You cut and expose. And that's an important message for parents. And this ties into other psukim in Mishle, Chanoch l'nar al pi darko, which we've talked about many, many, many times, that the goal of parenting and the goal of chinuch is not to change someone, but to uncover, to reveal, to expose the godless that is already there. Every person, every neshama is unique. And if I'm a parent, my goal is not to use my child to carry out whatever I was not able to do that I wanted to do. Right? Like in the secular world, if dad was a football player and had a knee injury, you know, he's going to steer his son to be a football player. But maybe the son wants to play the flutes, or whatever it would be. In Ruchnius, it's exactly the same thing. Chinuch is not about forcing someone to be what they're not, but it's to uncover the godless that is already there. Okay, so these are kind of miscellaneous lessons, and this again ties into the Mishle, Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. So wish you all to have a good week and take care.